And with a look in the backcountry and the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Trent. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, wow. This weekend is the Wasatch I kind of remember around here. You know, yesterday was one of those days where people come for a weekend and stay for a lifetime. The weekend storm really produced some right side up powder on all aspects and elevations, and there were plenty of smiles for miles out there in the backcountry. This morning, the skies are clear. Hopefully those clouds will fill in soon, as actually we don't want the strong March sunshine out there with all this nice powder snow. Yesterday, there were many reports of dry loose avalanches that happened both naturally as well as human triggered. And dry loose are, they're generally pretty tame avalanches. They start at a point and they kind of fan out. And it's really just avalanches that are running within the new snow. Now, they really only become a problem if we're on very big, steep, sustained slopes where these avalanches can run a very long distance and start picking up a lot of snow as they move downhill. We did have two soft slabs reported to us yesterday, again, failing in the new snow. They're about 8 inches deep and 100 feet wide, and one of them ran about 600 feet down the slope because of the old slick bed surfaces that are out there underneath this weekend's new snow. And really, the new snow is our biggest avalanche concern today, so there's kind of three things to keep in mind. One is sloughing or dry loose avalanches, like I just described. And again, those only really become a problem if we're in steep, sustained terrain or terrain where this loose snow could funnel into a gully or a terrain trap. Then second, we're going to want to watch out for any new snow soft slabs. These could be about 12 inches deep and up to 100 feet wide. And then third, with the sun this morning and the clear skies, like I said, fingers crossed these clouds move in, because that sun will quickly warm up our snow surface, especially on the southerly facing slopes. And currently, like I said, the temperatures are cold and these clouds should move in this morning, or at least I'm hoping, and that should keep that warming at bay. However, it's spring and things can change very quickly in the mountains. So, you know, keep an eye to the sky and notice if that snow surface is becoming wet. The first thing you'll see to unstable wet snow is roller balls coming down the side, you know, coming down the mountain. If you're seeing roller balls and you're standing in steep sunlit terrain, it's time to get out of there. It's time to move to a shadier aspect. And so just a couple quick things, you know, remember to travel one at a time and work the terrain as you travel up or down, meaning only expose one person at a time to avalanche terrain. And terrain selection is really the great equalizer that can either increase or decrease the consequence of an avalanche. You know, even a small avalanche and, you know, and you're standing above a big cliff band, if you get, you know, swept off your feet in one of these small dry loose avalanches and taken off the cliff, it might not be the avalanche that, you know, does you in. It's going to be the trauma from this cliff. Shovel shear tests or small test slopes and quick extended column tests can help your stability assessments out there today within the new snow, as well as slope cuts and small cornice drops will also be very effective in seeing how the new snow reacts. Just make sure no one is below you. You know, we don't want to trigger a loose avalanche down on somebody else below in a drainage. Bottom line, though, the avalanche danger is moderate on all upper elevation steep slopes for triggering a new snow soft slab avalanche or a long and fast running dry loose avalanche. And remember, upper elevation slopes are defined as anything above 9,500 feet. Below 9,500 feet, we have a low avalanche danger. And just keep in mind that if it starts snowing harder than expected or the temperature rises quickly, the avalanche danger can spike rapidly. So just be ready to kind of alter your plans based on the conditions that you're seeing out there as you travel.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Trent.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City Leadership founder Miles Radiman. We'll be talking about tonight's community leadership lecture with Rusty Gregory and Jeremy Lovett of Alterra Mountain Resorts in Deer Valley. Then U.S. Ski and Snowboard final update of the season with communications manager Laura Carlton. Finally, Mike Bradshaw is the director of Utah Development of Momentum. He talks about the plan for the project as well as trails in the area in the North Village Sorensen area. Stay tuned.
This is Mark with ESCO Heating, AC, Plumbing, and Electrical, supporting KPCW. With this warm weather, we can perform air conditioning inspections and tune-ups. More info at 855-ESCO-NOW or escoutah.com.
And that's
ESCO, ESCO.
And also stay tuned. Coming up on Mountain Money this morning, right after the local news hour, today's guests are Michael Strain. He's the Director of Economic Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He talks about how a $15 minimum wage may harm workers. Then Susan Madsen is a professor of leadership at the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. She'll talk about COVID-19's impacts to women in the workforce. Then conversation with Kiln Park City, a new community office space set to open in New Park April 1st. Stay tuned. Well, the Park City Council agreed to give in-person meetings a shot starting in May, COVID-19 pandemic and health orders permitting. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
At Thursday evening's council meeting, Mayor Andy Bierman asked for a raise of hands from councilors to gauge interest in hosting an in-person meeting sometime in May. All hands went up. The last in-person council meeting was March 9th of last year. 10 days later, after COVID-19 turned the world upside down, the first remote council meeting was held, and it has been virtual ever since. With vaccinations increasing across Utah and Summit County leading the state in per capita vaccinations, it was inevitable that in-person city meetings would return eventually. Now, we know when. It's all tentative at the moment and dependent on how the pandemic plays out over the next month, but the city is hoping to return to council chambers for a hybrid meeting in May. To start, only the council and city staff will be in person, with the public continuing to participate virtually over Zoom and Facebook Live. If that goes well and the pandemic continues to improve, council chambers will be gradually opened back up to the public. Despite the eventual transition back to in-person meetings, Councilor Nan Worrell told KPCW the value of continuing virtual participation in city meetings is obvious.
One thing the pandemic has taught us is that we needed to diversify the ways that people could connect with us and communicate with us. And, you know, it's long and hard to sit through long council meetings, especially if your agenda item that you're interested in comes later on in the agenda. And so by allowing virtual participation, you know, people can feed their kids dinner and they don't have to hire a babysitter and they can listen in and then, you know, just really hone in when the item of interest comes to them. And it gives us a great way to hear from people, as I said, that don't normally connect with us.
Park City City Council meetings in May are tentatively scheduled for the 13th, 20th, and 27th. KPCW will have more information about in-person city meetings once it is released by City Hall. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Good morning. Well, Park City's Leadership Annual Community Lecture was canceled last year but has been rescheduled for tonight. Leadership founder Miles Radiman will be speaking with the CEO of Alterra Mountain Company, Rusty Gregory, along with the president and new general manager of Deer Valley Resort, Jeremy Lovett. Miles joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, Leslie.
So it was 2019 when you featured Vail Resort's CEO, Rob Katz, so you figured it was Alterra's turn, and then again kind of got stopped short a year ago.
Yeah, you know, it was right on the very cusp of when we when the COVID hit and we thought we could pull off that lecture, and we were going right up to that morning and we said, no, we just can't do it. Everyone's closing down. So we had to cancel it and said, well, hopefully postpone it to the next year. And here we are.
Yeah, right. A year ago, too, it was also going to be just Rusty Gregory, again, the CEO of Alterra Mountain Company. And then what? He wanted to include Jeremy, or was that just?
Well, actually, I didn't speak to him about that. I wanted to include Jeremy because, you know, I realized that Jeremy came at the beginning of this year, and, you know, I wanted to introduce him to the community. I just met him for the first time myself in person. We had coffee last week, and, you know, I know his staff knows him, but I don't think the community knows him, and we've always prided ourselves with knowing who's around, you know, who's part of the community, and that's part of the leadership program is networking and making sure people get to know each other personally and not just as names or as companies.
All right, and I know that you've often talked about how you like to choose guest speakers who will inspire your leadership group. Is this more just informational, or is this, are these, what's the leadership role here?
Yeah, I guess I want to make that clear because I've gotten a number of emails now about tonight's lecture. This is not sort of a hard-hitting investigative report like you would do on the radio. What I've tried to do is introduce people who I think would be interesting to the greater Park City community, whether they're business leaders or thought leaders social leaders, and just have them discuss sort of their career, their trajectory of their leadership challenges, you know, what they've learned. And I think this year would be especially interesting because, number one, Altair, of course, is our other major company here, but also, you know, working in this era of COVID and the challenges you face, and challenges would often define a leader. So I thought that would be really interesting to introduce both of these gentlemen to the community and also to hear what kind of challenges they faced and what that meant for them personally as leaders of their organizations.
We're all tired of COVID.
I know we are. And so hopefully they're also going to look forward. I asked them to, you know, dust off their sort of musty crystal balls here and take a look forward and say, what do they expect coming up now? And what lessons did they learn? And I guess we're all going through this. What is the sort of the contours of the new reality that we might get into once we're past the worst of this? And we're not past it yet. And while we might be tired of it, you know, someone said on the radio the other day, they don't think the virus is tired of us.
Right, right. And I certainly, I mean, I guess it would be interesting to find out, too. I mean, what it could mean then, certainly, I mean, less revenues this year. And does that mean more price increases next year? Are you going to take it that far?
Well, you know, I'm going to ask questions. As I said, this isn't kind of a gotcha situation where I line them up and do it. But no, I'm not afraid to ask questions, and they're not afraid to answer questions. And we also have, you know, I'm going to allow each of them, you know, with the first hour to introduce themselves to the community, talk about their own backgrounds, their own challenges. I might throw a few questions in there. But then we have the second half hour or to an hour when people can call in questions and or write in questions and they can be asked. Now, Someone did write to me last night and asked if these would be anonymous. And I said, no, they won't. I mean, if you want to ask a question, you'll have to identify yourself truthfully and ask what you want. And the only prohibition I have is, you know, I said the same thing when we had Rob here, you know, from Vail. You know, this is, we're into civil. The whole leadership program is based on kindness and civility and talking to one another and compromising. So if people have questions, I'm sure there are questions, I would appreciate if they would just be civilly asked so that they could be answered. And we're not looking for speeches here from the public. That's why I've invited these speakers here. But we are asking that, you know, if there's legitimate questions they want to ask, please do.
Yeah. Anything that's hands off?
You know, I didn't say anything that's hands off, but again, this is not to set up some, it's not a shooting gallery, you know, that's not why I did this. And I know that, you know, there are questions about price raises and things of that nature. And I guess up at Vail, there's questions about, you know, the ski patrol and things of that nature. But no, this is not that kind of situation, but that doesn't mean something is off. I mean, any question is valid as long as it's civilly asked and in a manner of neighbors. You know, that's what we're doing here. We're trying to connect, not alienate people. But if there are questions that people have that they want legitimate answers for, absolutely ask the question, identify yourself, and that's fine.
Okay. So do you think it'll take us to the Mayflower Resort and the parking lot development?
You know, I hadn't even considered that, but sure, that's a legitimate question because that's on people's minds. I just rode my bike by there last week when you can still ride your bike, and it seemed like it was very quiet over there. So, yeah, I'd like to find out what's going on myself.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're the other people to ask because they're not really in charge of that, but I guess the legitimate question is what's the role? Is there some negotiation ongoing about who will run that resort?
Yeah. And certainly a big difference between Vail Resorts and Altera Mountain Company is that Vail, of course, are a publicly traded company, and they've got to make certain announcements based on, you know, federal regulations. Altera, however, a privately funded company, so we only get to know what they want to tell us. So anything...
Exactly, and that's, you know, and I think that's a good thing. I realize that a lot of people don't understand the structure of the ski industry anymore. You know, it's changed from the early founders, and I was never a founder, but I've been in this business 50 years now, and so I knew, I was sort of that bridge generation where I knew a lot of the original founders. As a matter of fact, that's one question I will talk to Rusty about, because Rusty worked for one of the original founders, Dave McCoy, out of Mammoth Mountain. That's how he got his start. And he eventually went on to take over that resort, and Dave McCoy just died a few years ago at 104 years old. But I got to meet Dave McCoy a number of times and work with him a little bit. So, yeah, I'm interested to say, you know, you're a real ski guy, Rusty, and you came up through a founder's resort and then took it over. What does that mean now that, you know, we're in the corporate culture and financing and so forth? Because I don't think we can expect the resorts to be like they were 50 years ago. I mean, I'm certainly not like I was 50 years ago when I look in the mirror. And, you know, I'd like to hear about the realities of what they face financially and, you know, with lawsuits and putting in restrictions and all those things. So hopefully they'll talk about some of those things.
Right. Okay, so it's a two-hour
Well, it's up to 2 hours. We start at 7 o'clock. Again, it's free, and anyone can sign in. All you have to do is go on the city's website, which is parkcity.org, and right on the home page, it'll say the community lecture, and on there is the Zoom link, and you can just Zoom in at 7 o'clock. At that point, you won't be in the meeting. I mean, you'll be listening to the meeting, but the meeting is essentially for the first hour or so for our leadership class, although anyone can listen in. Then we'll open it up for questions somewhere around 8 to 8:15, and then we'll take the questions. And again, people can write them into Minda. That's on the website, too, and we'll ask them as long as the people identify themselves. We're not looking for, you know, trolling here. That's not the purpose of what we do in the leadership program. We're anti-trolling. So, you know, I know there's always people out there that would like to, you know, stick it to the man. That's not what this is about.
All right. So this is, like I mentioned, part of the annual leadership program. And
This is the 27th year. And this would have been our 27th lecture, but it's our 26th because we canceled last year. So each year we have invited, sometimes we've had a panel, sometimes we've had, we had backcountry.com 1 year, we had, other companies in and around the ski industry. I like to do that because, you know, the ski industry is so essential to our past and our future here that I like people to understand the realities of it. I know what the ads look like because I'm always participating with the chamber, okaying those ads, or not okaying, but reviewing them. And, you know, we sell a dream here, and it is a dream life. But there's a reality under the dream, just like there is in any business, whether it's the city or KPCW or anything else. There's the financial end of it. There's the, you know, whatever it is. So I just want people to be cognizant of what it takes to keep this dream going and who are the people that are charged with doing that.
So how is Class 27 going this year, doing it virtually?
Well, so far it's going fine. I mean, I feel bad because I haven't met them in person, although I see them on the Zoom meetings, and they seem like great people. I mean, we're all really impressed with who they are and the questions they ask and so forth. We started the program this year with the understanding that we would try to get back together in person as soon as possible. That might be as soon as this summer. You know, even last fall, we did hold a meeting for Class 26 at the park in person. I'm hoping maybe in June we could do that again. I mean, it's all going to depend on what the scientists tell us, or, you know, what our health department, who I have a great deal of trust in, tells us in the county and the state. But, you know, we'll do whatever is said. We're, you know, socially distanced, the mask, washing hands. We follow all of that. We're not in the business of being super spreaders here. I'm also working right now, as we speak, on the city tour for this year with the hopes that we can have a city tour, and it might be in November. So I'm just giving myself as much rope as I can to make sure that everyone's vaccinated and would feel comfortable going. But I am talking again about taking our group to Sedona.
Okay. I think Flagstaff was in that group, too. Are you Sedona and Flagstaff, or just Sedona now?
Yeah, that's where we were going to go last year, and again, we had to cancel it. So I've stayed in touch with both of those communities, and I think they'd be anxious to have us back. And again, if it's safe.
Yeah.
If it's safe.
Let's usually what we also hear about is the class's project. Did Class 26 have a project, or was it just too difficult?
No, they actually had three projects. The main focus of their project, especially during COVID again, was to get back to this idea of kindness and how can we be kind to each other. And remember what we just came through, not only COVID, we came through a very divided election and a lot of ugly rhetoric, which has not really gone away, but maybe it's calmed down a little bit. And they were really interested again in the civility part of leadership. You know, it's our belief, and other people might have other beliefs that you have to, like, scream at each other all the time. That's not my belief. That's not the belief of the program. And so we're really talking about, you know, I heard a great speech years ago when I was with the Kellogg Foundation, and they said it was by Oscar Arias, who was the past president of Costa Rica, of Ecuador, I'm sorry. And he said, speak to power. But with love. You know, don't be afraid to speak truth to power, but with love. And I think there's that element in there that we can be nice to each other. We realize that everyone's a little bit different, but we have to understand what those differences are and not sort of vilify everyone.
I try to do it every day, Miles.
But that's your good job, and you're very good at it. But you do it with a lot of respect as well.
All right. So again, the annual community leadership lecture happening tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. People just need to go to parkcity.org and they'll find the Zoom link there.
Yeah, right on the homepage, it'll say events. If you scroll around a little bit, I think you have to go down a little, and then you can click on that, and there's the Zoom link there. And again, if you want to write a question in, that's fine. And if you want to raise your hand, then the chat will explain it when we get on there tonight. But yeah, we invite everyone, and the only thing that's out of bounds is incivility.
All right. Will it be recorded so that people could catch it later?
It won't be recorded. We've decided, and that was a decision we made years ago, not to record these. So if you're there, you know, be there, be square. I don't know how else you'd say it, but I'm sure we'll have reporters there who are reporting on it, but it's not recorded.
All right. Miles, hey, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Joining me now on the phone from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, I have Communications Manager Laura Carlton. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. Let's start off with the Alpine World Cup Finals.
Yes. Alpine World Cup Finals were in Switzerland this past week. Unfortunately, we had some weather, and both Super G and downhill for men's and women's were canceled. So not a great way to end this season for those disciplines. But Breezy Johnson ended up ranked a career fourth in the downhill standings, a career best fourth, sorry, in the downhill standings. Ryan Cochran single was 14th, Travis Ganong 18th, Bryce Bennett 19th, and Jerry Goldberg 23rd. On Saturday, the women's slalom was able to run, and Michaela finished second to secure second place in the overall slalom standings. And Paula Molson also had an excellent day. She skied into seventh place and took 11th in the overall standings. Sunday concluded competition with the women's giant slalom event, and Michaela finished out her season with yet another podium. She finished in second and secured second place in the giant slalom standings overall. The podium marked her 10th podium in a row and her 106th FIS World Cup career podium. Michaela finished fourth overall in the overall standings, and it's pretty impressive considering she only skied in technical events this season. Nina O'Brien took 12th place for the event, and she finished 17th overall in the giant slalom standings. So we had some great results to wrap up World Cup competition for the Alpine teams. There is one competition left for U.S. Alpine athletes with the 2021 Alpine Championships in Aspen Highlands, which will take place April 5th through 16th. So season is almost over, but still one more event to go.
Okay. The cross-country season is over, though, yeah?
Yes, cross country is wrapped, and those athletes are taking some much deserved time off. We do have a few retirements with Sadie Mobe Bjornsson, Sophie Caldwell Hamilton, and Simi Hamilton all announcing their retirement from competition. So we're grateful for those athletes and, you know, the dedication they put to their craft and representing America in cross country competition. But we are looking forward to see what they do with the next chapter in their lives.
Okay. And freestyle, they've got one more competition coming up in Utah.
Yes. Yes. So Moguls National Championships returns to Snowbird March 25th and 26th. And it's the first time in 25 years that Snowbird will host Freestyle National Championships competition. The last time they hosted, I believe they hosted it was 1994, 95, and 96. We're very excited to be home in Utah. Unfortunately, due to COVID, events are closed to guests and spectators. So I can't tell you to go watch them, but please cheer them on from wherever you may be, March 25th and 26th.
Okay. And what have we got going with the free ski snowboard teams?
Free ski and snowboard wrapped events up in Aspen. On Tuesday, we had the World Champs Big Air competition. On the free ski side, Mac Forehand led the Americans with the fourth place, and he just missed the podium with only his second competition back from a knee injury. Jed Heinkes led the snowboard contingent with a seventh place, and that concluded World Champs competition. However, there was still the Grand Prix to run for slopestyle and halfpipe events. This is the 25th anniversary of the U.S. Grand Prix, and these events also served as Olympic tryout events for the 22 games, so important events for our U.S. athletes. Saturday, we had slopestyle competition, and on the free ski side, Park City local Colby Stevenson took the victory, and Mac Forehand claimed second. On the snowboard side, Red Girard and Haley Langland both earned second place finishes. So those athletes set themselves up really well heading into this Olympic qualification process that will run, you know, up until the games next year. And on Sunday, we had halfpipe competition. It was an exciting contest. On the free ski side, Aaron Blunk and Britta Sigourney were the top finishers with a first and third, respectively. We had four through six on the men's side with David Wise, Burke Irving, and Alex Ferreira. And on the snowboard side, Chloe Kim remains podium perfect. It was her fourth consecutive victory this season. Sean White made his return to competition for the first time since the 2018 Olympics, and he was the top American man, finishing just off the podium in fourth. 2022 would be Sean's fourth games appearance, and he made it clear he has not lost his touch despite a three-year hiatus from snowboard competition. On the men's side, we also had Chase Blackwell in fifth, Lucas Foster in sixth, and Taylor Gold in seventh. So an exciting end for the free ski snowboard competition season, which was, you know, probably one of our most disrupted seasons due to rescheduling and cancellations this year. So we were thrilled to get off so many contests the last few weeks in Aspen.
Okay. This is basically the final report, regular report of the season then?
Yes, this will be our final report. And just to finish off with the snowboard cross team, Hagen Carney, which is a Park City area local, he finished second in the finals in Switzerland, and that secured the Nations Cup for the U.S. snowboard cross team. So the snowboard cross team has had an impressive season as well. They had eight podiums for the 2020-21 season. And because we have pretty much wrapped elite level competition, we will not be speaking with you in the mornings on Mondays until, you know, things ramp back up next year. Just wanted to say a huge thank you to the community. This season has been incredible, you know, not only for the results, but the mere fact that it happened, training and competing through this pandemic has been challenging, and we're just so grateful to have provided opportunities to our athletes, you know, both locally and abroad, and we couldn't do it without this community's support. So a huge thank you.
And before I let you go, though, I mean, since our last report, Tiger Shaw's resigned. So what's next with that?
Yes, Tiger Shaw announced that he will be stepping down after the Beijing Games in 2022. So the, you know, search for a new CEO will begin soon. And we're hoping with this elongated timeline to really dig in and find the right person, as well as provide a good overlap period where Tiger and the new CEO would, you know, be working together through that transition. So, you know, that's all the information I have right now, but Tiger is still very much committed to the organization and getting us through to these next games. And we look forward to working with, you know, the new leader that comes in and to provide the next chapter for US Ski and Snowboard.
Okay, Laura, thanks. You and your team this winter. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Well, springtime in the Rockies means migration of humans, camping, hiking, and recreating in National Forest Service lands. It's also a time when wildlife is highly vulnerable and weakened from the winter season. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has a few tips from the Division of Wildlife Resources to help wild animals as they move through the late winter and early spring conditions.
Wildlife in northern Utah emerges from the winter season weekend and looking for new green growth as their digestive systems shift to a summer diet. Many females are carrying babies with June delivery timeframes. Utah Division of Wildlife Resources Public Information Officer Faith Heaton-Jolly said people who love the outdoors and want to bring their pets while recreating can help wildlife survive during this challenging season by keeping their dogs leashed.
By this time of year, by spring, a lot of them are a lot more weak and kind of vulnerable. And so, you know, sometimes they're switching over from their winter kind of foods to their spring foods, and it's just kind of a delicate time for them. If they potentially get chased by a dog, if there's dog off leash and while you're hiking or something that's chasing some of these big game animals, it uses up that energy that they may need to survive, which could definitely be detrimental to them. And also, you know, it could be dangerous for your pet as well. You know, we love pets. We know a lot of people love pets and take them outdoors, and that's great. But yeah, we definitely want you to keep them leashed just because it could be a safety concern. If they start to chase moose, for example, they can often get aggressive.
KPCW has received several reports about dogs finding fresh kills in Round Valley. Heaton-Jolly said this could pose a different set of concerns for your safety and your pet's safety.
You know, we do live in wildlife country. You know, there's cougars, there's bears, and a lot of times they, you know, could potentially kill a deer or an elk or something in an area that you may be hiking near a trail or something. And so your dog, you know, kind of follow their natural instincts. They may be drawn to that as well. So that's another potential danger too, is if there is a fresh kill, potentially that's kind of a cache site for a cougar or a bear, and they may be coming back through to that area. And so that could be another potential wildlife conflict.
The DWR closes a section of the north side of Round Valley during the winter months. Keeping people out of sensitive areas gives animals a better chance of survival.
But basically in the spring, when all the greenery starts coming up, they slowly transition to that diet and away from their kind of woody sagebrush diet that they have in the winter. So that's kind of another reason that they're a little sensitive, is they're just, you know, they're kind of switching over to that, and it makes them a little weak. And if your pet is chasing them away from that kind of feeding area, then that kind of wastes some of their energy as well while they're transitioning. And so they are just kind of really sensitive right now. That's partly why we close a lot of our wildlife management areas, you know, from early in the year until spring. It's just they're just pretty vulnerable. And so we want people to be conscientious of that. And when possible, you know, just keep your pet on a leash. It keeps them safe. It keeps the wildlife safe.
Utah law allows people to shoot dogs for chasing big game such as deer, elk, and moose. The Wild Aware Utah website has information on best practices to coexist with animals in nature. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, according to a report by Park City staff, the city could be several years ahead of schedule for their goal of attaining 100% renewable energy citywide by 2030 if everything goes to plan. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
City Council received an update on the Utah Renewable Energy Program on Thursday evening and was pretty enthusiastic about what they were hearing. In short, about 20 communities in Utah have indicated strong interest in signing on to a statewide community renewable energy program in partnership with Rocky Mountain Power. The list also includes Colville, Camas, and Salt Lake City, among others. The eligible communities represent roughly 25% of the state's population and 40% of Rocky Mountain's electricity sales in Utah. If all the communities sign on, it means a lower overall cost for Park City and an accelerated track to attaining that 2030 goal. Park City passed a resolution in 2016 setting a goal of community-wide 100% renewable energy by 2030. The city, Summit County, Salt Lake City, and Rocky Mountain Power then successfully lobbied the Utah legislature in 2019 and passed the Utah Community Renewable Energy Act, which laid the groundwork for the current program. Park City Environmental Sustainability Manager Luke Carton explained to the council on Thursday that if everything stays on schedule and the proper governance agreements and ordinances are adopted, the city could actually start shopping for renewables almost immediately. It's even possible some resources could come online as early as 2023, including a new 80-megawatt solar farm being built out in Tooele County. Mayor Andy Bierman asked Carton if this means the city could be several years ahead of schedule. Carton said, in a perfect world, yeah, it could.
Based on earlier projections and conversations, it seems like that we, I don't want to jinx us, but it seems like we have the potential to be probably 4 or 5 years ahead of where we thought we were going to be on this.
I wasn't going to say anything. that would be great.
The city is budgeting to become what is called an anchor community for the program, which would help cover the initial $700,000 cost for the program while other communities decide whether or not to join. According to the staff report, as more communities join the program, the dollar amount Park City and the other anchor communities are responsible for would shrink. If all 15 non-anchor communities do join, Park City would ultimately pay about $36,000 over 2 years to participate. Councilor Nan Worrell told KPCW although no action was taken by the council on Thursday, she and her colleagues were united in their support for the program.
I think this is a way for us to put our money where our mouth is. You know, we have made these aggressive climate goals and energy goals where we're going to be 100% by 2030. And this is one more step in that direction.
The next steps for the council will be adopting the program's governance agreement, as well as appointing a board member, alternate, and staff to represent the city going forward. The governance agreement is expected to be finalized in April. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, last May, the Heber City Council approved the 8,000-acre, 5,500-unit Sorensen annexation, and while huge, some of that will remain as open space with trails. On the phone with a look at what's being planned and where they go from here, I have Mike Bradshaw. He is the director of Utah Development for Momentum Developer Group. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning.
So the annexation was approved last May. Where are we with it? I mean, are we under construction at this point?
We are. We have begun construction on the south end of the project near Coyote Lane. So, yes, we're underway.
Yeah. Okay. So that Coyote Lane is under construction. So that is part of the project then? What are you doing there?
That is. Well, first of all, we're realigning Coyote Lane and upgrading that road into a functional road. It was been kind of skinny and kind of a problematic area. So we're upgrading that and then starting with the canal crossings there that need to be done so that the other subdivision improvements can then go in.
Okay. So are you putting in the sewer and the infrastructure at this point or just?
Yep. All the sewer, water, storm drain infrastructure and roads are going in at this point. Yep.
Okay. And then there's also a great trail system right there. So is that all going away?
Well, it's the existing trailhead that's currently there will be going away. We'll be moving it up the hill slightly, be adding more parking, bathrooms, and a pavilion area for a nice overlook there. And then we'll also be expanding and redoing some of the trails in that area as well. So it's fairly significant trail upgrade in that corridor, but it's going to cause a little bit of pain, I know, because so many people use that trailhead this year.
All right. So they still will be able to access the kind of the system through the trailhead off of Highway 32 then?
Yes, off the UVU trailhead there. And we're realigning and making some of those connections so that you can still get back over to the Coyote Canyon Trail and use the upper section of the trail, which then loops and connects to the backside of the mountain as well. So all that's underway, those different connection pieces. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's step back just a little bit. So we kind of know that that's the southern end of the development. So it kind of goes up and then north from there, northeast?
Yes, that's right. Kind of goes up and north from there and then, you know, continues north until it goes through and behind the college, doesn't quite connect all the way over to Highway 32, but certainly overlooks that area on Highway 32 as it goes back up around. Then we have a couple of phases that are underway along Highway 32 on the north end, which are next to the existing phase that we started a number of years ago. And so there's a townhome phase and a single family lot phase that'll be going this year on that end as well.
Okay. Now, Heber City says that it intended to essentially keep what was agreed to in the development of plan that was approved for this Sorenson property by Wasatch County as far as density and open space goes. Is that what's happening here then?
Yeah, that hasn't changed. It's the same number of units that we approved within the county, the same type of development, and so the same plan, just maybe a little more modernized, continues on.
Sure, and Envision Heber 2050 is the updated version of the Heber City's general plan. Is this plan in line with that?
Yeah, generally speaking, it is in line with that. We feel that it meets all the strategies and goals of the 2050 plan, and we continue to try and find ways where we can continue to be in compliance with the 2050 plan. I believe it does.
Okay. So we've been told that you've hired a trails builder and purchased your own equipment. Are these what are we talking about in terms of trails and mileage and things like that?
Well, currently right now we have about a 24-mile loop that circumvents the mountain that faces the Heber Valley. And then we have a few ancillary smaller trails that connect onto those. But we just basically determined that trail building is a significant part of our project, and the trails are integral part to, we believe, to its success. We also know that, people just love the trail system. And so we've wanted to try and find ways to be able to expand that quickly and readily. And so we felt it was important to have our own trail building team on board so that we can, we can be fluid in doing that. We have a lot of trails we need to revise right now with the construction going on Coyote. And so it just seemed to make most sense to have our own trail building crew there. And so we'll continue to add to that trail system and improve it over the years.
And so not only are dirt trails planned, but a number of network of bike paths and walking paths. What's the plan there?
Yeah, we've been able to work with the canal companies. They've been great to work with about allowing us to use the corridors that run north and south along the Timp Canal and the Wasatch Canal, which provides a significant trail corridor right through the heart of the North Village area there. And so one of those trails on one side of the canal will be a paved trail, and then the other side will be a dirt trail on each side of those canals that run north and south. The nice part about those trails is, since they follow the natural land contour, they're great beginner trails and just are a nice, comfortable walking trail versus some of the more mountain trails that are maybe steeper and have more switchbacks to them. These trails will be just very pleasant, very comfortable trails for people to come out and enjoy.
So, will the trails and the pathways then allow people then from the north end of the development to get to that North Village commercial area on a path?
Yeah, they could. Yep. Those paths should flow from the north and the south all the way into the center of that village around near the college. So from the commercial area all the way to each end.
And then what about connecting the west side of the Heber Valley to here, the east side? Is that not your project?
I mean, that would go on. We do have some connections from the west side to the east side. One of them that we've worked on is on the north end that comes under Highway 40, using one of the the animal accesses that, through accesses that was built when the Highway 40 was built. That's there on the north end, and that connects, to the current system. It'll be up to the future of the city and the county, how it connects through the North Fields and however that trail system ends up working through that area. I know the city and the county have had discussions about how best to put the trails through the North Fields there, but I think that's an ongoing discussion, but certainly we would like to see them connected.
Okay. I don't believe you have any golf courses planned for the annexation area. Are there other amenities? Are there amenities you have planned?
I don't want to take golf off the table at this point, but we obviously have the real estate to do it. It's a possibility. I don't see it in the, right now in the near future. But our goal will be to focus around the larger trail systems. We'll have some trails that are also designed for UTVs and motorized vehicles. We'll probably have some backcountry yurts and some of those other things to help facilitate the larger trail system as well. So our biggest focus will be around the most effective way that we can make that trail system a benefit to the whole community. Now, obviously, we'll have, some of the more, typical, neighborhood parks, tot lots, swimming pools and clubhouses and those things that you would see in a typical master plan community. But I think our biggest focus, what we'll be known for is our trail system and how it integrates with the backcountry.
Okay, Mike, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I appreciate your time. And so far, we've appreciated the input from the community that we've received and have enjoyed working with Heber City.
Okay, we'll look forward to another update. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, nearly 700 children in Wasatch County live below the poverty line. In Summit County, it's almost 600. The American Rescue Plan of 2021 addresses childhood poverty across the board, including here in the Wasatch Back. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
The poverty numbers derive from 2019 census data. Currently, a three-person household making $21,960 is below the poverty level. Early Childhood Alliance Director Kristen Schultz said the U.S. poverty level is shockingly low.
So in other words, if you make $22,000 to support you and your two children, you are not considered to be impoverished under the poverty level. It's very, very low. You'll see a lot of the programs that go up to 200% poverty because it doesn't really capture all of the people who are going to need some public assistance.
Under the rescue plan, Schultz said 94% of Utah children would benefit from tax credit payments of $3,600 per child up to age 6 and $3,000 per child 6 to 17 years old. Schultz supports extending the payments permanently and hopes some of the draft plans circulating in Congress will do that.
When you look at those statistics and you can find studies that vary between $7, as a return on the investment for every dollar invested, up to $13. But it is unquestionably a very good investment to invest early. And the reality is children are expensive and society as a whole benefits when our children benefit. So to me, it makes great sense to invest in these children. There is no requirement on how these funds are spent. I think a lot of people are pleased to see that in several respects.
President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan policy into law on March 11th. Projections suggest over 90% of U.S. children will benefit from the plan, with a 56% reduction in childhood poverty overall. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
This is KPCW Park City.